Welcome to the Motoring Podcast. This is episode 135, a Subaru Outback Long-Term Review Special Edition. Hello, I'm Andrew. Regular listeners will have heard our weekly updates whilst I had the Outback on loan. Because we are lovely and we want to make it easy for you, the listener, we have put all these together into one episode. So without further ado, we hope you enjoy and are informed by our review. You know, from time to time, we are lucky enough to be loaned vehicles to test, usually for a week or two. Mm-hmm. Which is very, very gratefully received from the manufacturers. Well, we have our first long-term car test.
Ooh, what, that's just
like there should be some sort of fanfare there.
What, just like the big magazines have, yeah?
Yeah, just like the big people do, like the grown-ups.
Yeah, I know, that's what this lies with. Even the people don't steal the chocolate croissants. Yeah.
So we have Subaru to thank for this first for the show. In this instance, because I have a Subaru Outback 2-litre diesel SE Premium Linartronic.
Lineartronic.
For a month. Lineartronic, anyway, sorry, yes.
Can't speak properly.
I know, well, I may have to run
you.
To the other end of the country to hide.
Yeah. So that's what you've got. So do you want to tell us a little bit more about it now that we've worked out how you pronounce the name?
Yes, I can try that, certainly.
Go on, then.
This is £34,995 on the road, and it's the top of the range. Although I say top of the range starts at £32,995 for the 2.5-litre petrol. So it's not a massive range as far as cost goes, or cost range goes. Doing a quick check for people who like to pay monthly, on Subaru's own website, their PCP deal with a £3,500 contribution, which they are doing at the moment. And if you have a deposit of exactly £6,305, which is precise amount, you will pay £379 a month for 49 months. And the first month is the first 12 months even are interest free, and then it's 6.9%. So that's to give you an idea of the sort of monthly cost.
That's very complex to work out.
Yes, the PCP stuff is very complex to work out. Mm-hmm. But you do need to read all the documentation carefully.
Yes,
I think is what everybody needs to do. So this is a 2-litre boxer diesel, because they have a boxer engine. It has 150 of the horses, which gives out 350 of the torques.
Are they metric horses?
Yes.
Right, just checking. People do actually like to know, believe it or not, yes.
And through the Lineartronic, continuously variable transmission, which means there's no noticeable gear changes. It's not like you... As Alan has described before, there is a cone and a band runs up and down continuously to give the You're right there, Alan. I don't mean to kill you off.
Yeah,
I was going to ask you to describe it again, but I thought that would be cruel and unnecessary. the one I've got is in a rather fetching a platinum metallic grey. And it's on rather smart 18-inch alloys, which look nice when they're clean. They are not clean at the moment. They're not clean at all. CO2-wise, this is 159 grams per kilometre. And so that will mean, for the first year, you pay £500 to the government. And then, because of the wonderful way they've decided the VED, it's £140 a month after that.
So, £140 a year after that.
Yes.
£40 a year, yeah. Cool. So what have you done? Have you done in it? What have you done in it so far? And how well has it done what you've asked it to do?
We have gone on a road trip. We have gone down to the southwest, mm-hmm. In it, and therefore we have done motorway miles. Mm-hmm. We have done A roads, we've done B roads, we've done little lanes with lots of grass in the middle of them.
Ah, almost so perfect green laning for an in outback. Places. You couldn't have asked for a better car for that.
No, exactly. And it has swallowed all our junk easily. Uh-huh. That all fits no problem at all, to the point where it's not above the rear cover, because there's some fancy bit of extra stowage underneath, because there's no actual spare wheel.
Oh, right, okay.
So I can put things underneath and pretend I'm all clever. And that was one of the bits that I've really liked about it. It's only a small, tiny thing, but there is a hook on a bit of string that I can keep up the boot lid, the boot floor up, while I am putting things in and taking them out without having to hold it up with one hand. Now, that sounds possibly silly, and why am I fixating on it? When you are taking many bags in and out as many times as I have done in the last 4 days, this is an incredibly useful thing that has shown there's a little bit of thought, and it is only what it needs to be. It is no more. It's not a fancy aluminium chain or anything. This is just a hard-wearing bit of string and a hook that will hook nicely onto the place. And it's got its own little area under the boot lid, so it's not just left dangling about. It all gets put away neatly. And you know I like a little bit of clever thought in a car.
Yes, I do.
And that shows a little bit of thought, and I like that.
So, you say you did motorway miles and stuff. I have a copy of the spec sheet in front of me, so I happen to know that this is one of the models fitted with the EyeSight tech that Subaru is so keen on telling us how clever and how smart it is, and even let us try to crash into other stuff to show how clever and smart it was. How did you? What we've never done is actually, you know, I've tried it all sorts of places, but haven't actually tried it on the motorway. So, because it acts as active cruise and lane keeping and all that stuff, doesn't it?
There's no lane keeping assist.
Oh, okay, right.
There is lane departure warning.
Right.
But yes, there is an active cruise which worked really well.
Okay, cool.
I was in, at one point I was testing it when we were in a lot of stop-start traffic because, hey, British motorways, a lot of stop-start traffic, and for a long portion of time, even though I was poised, primed, I was not touching the brake or the accelerator, and the car was doing it all for me.
Mm-hmm. And did that make it more relaxing or not?
Yes, it did. That made it much, much easier because you can change how sensitive or how close you get to the vehicle in front through the steering wheel. You can change how far away it senses and then makes its changes. And I set it reasonably far apart, but it would sort of you would almost coast up towards the vehicle, and then there would be a nice gap that if they stopped and you had to pull out, you could do that easily without worrying about, you know, like you would if you weren't in, say, I don't know, an Audi, mm-hmm. where you're incapable of getting more than a foot from the boot be in front of you.
Okay.
And it worked really well. It worked really well at speed. It worked really well at slow speed. I was very impressed with it, and it made the drive down on the motorway side of things so much easier. And it felt like it was a human doing the accelerating and braking as well. It didn't take ages to get you back up to speed. And the braking felt very natural. Not, here we go, oh, we've hit a marker, right, we slam on, and then everybody goes, oh, what's going on? Mm. It wasn't that at all. It was progressive when it sensed the vehicles. And then, obviously, if things started slowing quicker, it obviously pressed harder, as you would.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it just felt very natural from that point of view.
So was it quite passenger-friendly? Because I know that that's one of the challenges, certainly with earlier versions of these, is that sometimes trickier passengers complain that it's too jerky in and out.
No, it could be. It wasn't doing that. It wasn't doing the jerkiness.
Okay.
I mean, there was a couple of times. The one thing I will say is the warning for braking is, it's not quite sensitive, but it is perhaps. There was a couple of times it triggered just a fraction of. I mean, it really is a fraction of a second before I was pressing the brake. Mm-hmm. So it. that gave me confidence that it's paying attention.
Okay.
If you know what I mean. Because it went off, I was going, ah, I was braking anyway, but you've spotted this. That's fine. Yeah. That's okay. I can... Right, I have a bit of trust in this system. I'm not saying I will just let it... I'm not saying it's a an autonomous driving thing. It is a driver assist.
Right, which is the right term, really. I think even we will agree that that's the right term. Okay.
Yes.
Any surprises, things that you weren't expecting?
Surprises. It doesn't have parking sensors.
And even at the rear?
Big old no. It's got a camera.
Oh, okay.
Well, rear, I'm not as worried because it's a flat back.
Aha. Uh-huh.
I know where the back is. It's the front I'm a bit more nervous about because the bonnet goes down and then there's a bit on the front of the car with a bit of plastic cladding.
Yeah.
Type effecty thing in front of the bumper around the lights. So I'm very conscious that, you know, it's a press car. What don't you do in a press car? You don't scratch the press car.
Yes.
And I'm very conscious of, you know, where the nose is. And because I haven't got a bleep saying, oh, you're getting a bit close, that I'm more sensitive to that than I would be if there was a sensor in there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so but I'm sure you're...
But I'm a bit surprised there isn't anything in the front.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, is that it?
I'd say that it's our experiences and the feedback from the beta group is that it's very comfy.
Cool.
Tons of room. And everybody has been absolutely fine all the way down.
Fab. Okay, well, that's high praise.
No travel issues.
Cool.
A bit of housekeeping. I have two sets of miles per gallons now. Week one, I did 405.2 miles, which gave me 36.15 miles per gallon, which included a lot of motorways, but that also included a lot of summertime motorways where people seem to like to queue.
Sitting still then?
Yes, and not travelling very fast and then travelling again. And yes, but as I said last week, and you can go and listen to last week's show if you missed it, the technology, the EyeSight technology was brilliant on that. For that stuff. So week two, I have done 354 miles, which has returned 30.88 miles per gallon. And
yes,
that...
you are down the southwest in the tiny little wiggly lane.
Yes, there are lots of very tiny lanes with town driving, no dual carriageway, no motorway, no nice smooth A roads for cruising along. So I'm not that surprised. Plus, there's lots of hills where I am.
And just to remind everyone, this is the Subaru Outback 2-litre diesel with the Lineartronics. That's the CVT gearbox.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. This week I'm going to talk about the exterior and the interior. Because last week we just did a general introduction to the car. Mm-hmm. So for anyone who doesn't know, the Outback is a raised-up estate-type car that Subaru do. They no longer do the saloon or the... non-raised-up version of the Legacy. So it's just the Outback now. And I tell you what, every time I come up to it, I just get reminded of the original Forester in idea and concept. That it's a slightly raised up. There's it's a big estate. It's, you know, it's nice, lots of glass and things like that. And it just reminds me of that idea. Which I'm a fan of. This is before the Forester became a full-blown SUV now. So, yeah, that's just something that I get reminded of. And obviously because it's a raised-up estate, it does have a bit of plastic cladding, which... But this is actually quite tastefully, I think is perhaps the word to put it.
It's not OTT.
No, because it's round the bottom of it. It's round the, underneath the bumpers at the front and back and along the sides. And it's not as though they've put masses on the wheel arches and things like that. So
it's the bit that need the protection.
Yes, it's where it's needed rather than for just the look. And another thing I've noticed about it is it looks a lot narrower than, say, C-Class or 3 Series or A4s. It looks quite a narrow car. I mean, perhaps the height is helping a little bit with that, but it isn't a massively wide car, which has made it very easy to drive around the narrow lanes, which has been handy. but it's, you know, it's a proper estate shape, so it's almost a squared off back. It's not one of these lifestyle estates that sort of is a glorified so fastback.
Almost coupe, yeah.
So I think it's quite a handsome look. I mean, it's not stunningly good looking, but I think it's one that will last the test of time, which is, you know, it's a Subaru. These cars are bought and kept for long times.
Much to their disgust.
Yeah, I mean, I think Subaru's, you know, secretly very proud, but then sort of going, oh God, please someone buy another one.
Just buy another one.
Yeah. But the interior, it's easy to get in, as you would expect, front and rear. The doors are actually quite light to open, but they don't feel flimsy or, you know, cheap or anything like that. So it's easy for the kids actually to get themselves in and out. Obviously, if you're not in car parks, don't let children touch doors in car parks, everybody. God. You know, the whole where you see people parking over two spaces. Well, I do that rather a lot in the corners of car parks, just so no one can ding. The rear, talking of the rear, because I have the little people, there's a nice big bench in the back, and it's easy for them to step up and get into. There's plenty of space, even with one of them in a car seat. They can all get themselves into their seats without having to break out World War III and other lovely family moments like that. Mm-hmm. There is a transmission tunnel, as one would expect, because this is the symmetrical four-wheel drive. But it's not overly intrusive. You know, it's not a hugely wide, tall one. It's easy to get round, so that's no problem. It won't be a problem for adults either.
No.
There's nice big side windows which help create this sort of airy feel, or help with the continued feel of being airy, because there's lots of space for the whole kicking of front seats. That doesn't happen very much because they can't reach.
Not once you've broken their legs, it doesn't.
No, quite. But there is tons of room with the seats. There's no issue that way. They don't feel cramped in the back. And up front, where the important person sits, she's very happy in her comfy heated electric seats.
She's got heated seats, so she's happy.
Yes, quite. And with them, you can really find a nice, comfy driving position, as you would expect, because the steering wheel is adjustable as well. Nice leather feel to that, and it's got floppy paddles. But I'll talk about that next week, probably, when I discuss...
That's a relief.
That side of things. dashboard, it's quite a simple layout. Things are where you would want them and expect them. So there's a big rev counter, there's a big speedo, you've got your temperature gauges, and there's a little digital display in between the two big dials, which you can adjust. You know, anyone who's driven, you know, a new car recently, there's always a split in displays. Bits that just for the driver, so it'll have like the next action on the route. Actual speed is a digital display, it's a figure, you know, things like your instant miles per gallon, that sort of thing, your trip information, that sort of
stuff. All the stuff that you scroll through once and go, oh, it does that. And then you set it to one thing and leave it forever, yeah?
Yeah, that stuff.
Yeah, good.
And then when we just go across the dashboard into the central console area, that's got the 8-inch touchscreen, which is controlled by, the menus are controlled by buttons on the side of it, which are exactly as they were when we drove it briefly.
The off-road day, across much of the range.
I really like that little touch because it is a physical section of the dashboard you're touching to move the one, so you don't actually have to be looking at it, which is the problem that touchscreens can bring up. The aircon and heating controls and heated seats and that sort of stuff, that's below that, and that's, you know, as you would expect, nice simple buttons, dials, easy to use. Again, usually you press it once and it's done type thing. But it all works well. It doesn't feel horrible. Neither does any of the other materials actually inside the cabin. Not every material is mega expensive, but I really feel that it's going to last. Again, the exterior will last the test of time. I think the interior will as well.
We've always said that, and I know from previous experience of ones my parents had that it might not be the sexiest slush molded dashboard that you get in a German car, but at least you feel that it's going to be like that in 10 years' time.
Yeah, absolutely.
No matter what you've done to it.
Absolutely. There's a little cubby hole below that, which has got the 12 volt charging socket, two USBs, and an AUX cable interface. So that all works fine. Again, controlled by the infotainment thing. And the screen, sorry.
Infotainment system.
Yes, that as well. There's actually a sunroof in this one, electric tilt and slide, which is nice.
How big is it? Is it just a sort of single one? Or
yeah,
it
it's not panoramic. It's not panoramic.
What we
in the 80s and 90s would expect.
Oh, okay. So it's a 1990s size sunroof.
Yeah. It adds a bit of air when you want it to, and you can if the sun's beating down too much, because sometimes I have found a little bit of reflection off the screen because of the angle of the dash.
Yeah.
You just shut it over and you can see again, so that's no problem. The boot is, as one would expect from a large estate, big. And it's got, as I mentioned, I think I mentioned this last week, but it's got the clever underfloor storage. And I've found the electronic...
Does it hold a baguette?
It holds more than a baguette.
Oh, okay. That's
it. Holds a podcasting studio and filming equipment,
and yes,
sports
I
balls.
I have no comment to that.
No, but the electronic boot door actually has been really useful.
It's one of those things that you think is just a terrible gimmick until you actually get used to using it.
Yes, and if you can time it right, then you're not stood there waiting for it to open. Because I know Major Gav is worried about this, but it does have door pockets in from the back doors and the front doors. But I know that was a concern of Major Gav to know whether there was door pockets available. So surprises this last week. There's no USB sockets for the rear passenger. There's only the one 12 volt.
That's normal.
Charge? No, it's not.
Unless you're paying extra in a Land Rover. That's
no,
normal.
No, it's not. It's not. Cars I've had on loan have had that stuff.
Okay.
There's one 12 volt charging socket in the cubby box that you rest your arm on.
Yeah.
That you can trail cables out of, so it can be done. But I would have expected them to be on the back of the cubby box where the air vents are.
So is it the USB or the 12 volt pot socket that you're really looking for?
Either.
Okay, just a charging point.
Just charging points for the rear passengers.
Okay.
But, yeah. There are a couple of curry hooks, but they're quite flimsy, and they are right by the back door of the boot. So
slams.
Yeah. There's.
Sorry.
Yes, quite. They need... Yeah, I'm not impressed with those. Things I have found very useful though with the car, apart from the boot, is the electronic folding mirrors.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks to the wonderful way in which the Southwest have made their roads.
It's electronic folding mirrors are one of those things to not be sniffed at.
No, but I'm a little bit surprised that they don't automatically fold when you switch the engine off. So
yeah, some of them you can do that in the deep in the bowels, and sometimes it's actually a dealer setting that they can set it to do that for you. I noticed that the BRZ I have parked outside is exactly the same, and it's quite annoying. You just kind of I like it. I mean, none of my cars do that, but I like it because it's a visual sign that your car is locked.
Yeah. And The other, one of the other things is I've actually been approached by a few people asking about the car. So that's always been nice. Asking about it, saying that they quite like the look of it and things like that. So, you know, I down here with Middle England that seems to have descended upon.
Just that time of the year where all the middle classes go to the southwest.
Yes, and me. And
my point entirely.
Yeah. But people seem, I think they just haven't seen them, and they haven't seen enough of them, and it's in a good way raised a few eyebrows and made people think of it. So that's been interesting to see that it's not just my thoughts on the car and how it looks. That's been good. The other thing I really like is the smoothness of the Lineotronic system.
Just a bit of a even better than the normal auto once you get used to it.
Absolutely. Change. There's none of that going on. You just keep going.
No.
Yeah. And I like that a lot.
Yeah, I like that a lot when we drove them before with the Lineotronic, because it's a bit like Mazda earlier on with us saying about how they believe they've managed to solve something that bigger manufacturers couldn't. Lineotronic and stuff and CVTs make lots of sense for Subaru, because Subaru used to be packaging, you know, a transfer case and a gearbox into a standard size saloon car or estate car. And for them, being able to have whatever gear is needed is fantastic for those let's off road moment that people take it in or towing or any of these things, because it saves people that effort and having to do that in bad weather and stuff. So really glad they seem to have nailed it.
Mm. I have a correction. I erroneously dismissed
you the grumbled like heck
dismissed the curry hooks in my disappointment, only because in my ineptitude, I hadn't worked out how to use them properly. I presumed that they were just a hook that dropped down. However, if you use them correctly, you press them in, they drop down, you put the handle of your bag on, and push them up again, and they lock back in place, and it's locked. Nice and
did
safe.
Did you get corrected?
No.
Were you told off by PR?
No, not at all. Not at all. They didn't have a word with me about that at all. Which is very good of them, because I worked it out myself. Because I thought that.
Well done.
Because I went back to that after I'd said it and I thought, that can't be right. That the hook's not the right shape, nothing. And I played about and said, I've been thick, is what the problem is. It is not the car, it is me.
Okay.
Right, moving on to some housekeeping. I have not filled up this week, so I cannot give you any accurate MPGs. However, I've done about 285 miles and I have an indicated range left of about half a tank.
So it won't be double that. It'll be about 200 odd miles.
Yeah, anyway. Something like that.
Yeah.
Something like that. Right, so Outlander, Outback even, is a jacked up estate, as you know. And as a result of the way it's been set up, which is slightly towards the softer side. Now, most...
It's good for off-road.
Yes, well, most modern cars are to firm, medium to firm. This is just medium soft, I would suggest. As a result, there is a tiny bit of roll in it, that has to be said, but not in a... you know, 70s wallowing barge type manner in any stretch of the imagination. But it makes sure that the ride is really comfortable on the roads. There has been no incidents of people complaining, and there has been no incidents of even a hint of travel sickness by any of the passengers.
Famous last words there.
Yeah, so far. I've been really impressed with the ride. It has been very good on the road.
So has it been the opposite of Tune for the Nürburgring then?
Yes, quite. Exactly cool. The opposite of that. The diesel engine. Now, it's generally really quiet. This has been commented on by important people in the cabin. And Mrs. Correct Windscreen has said quite often, she said, oh, it's very quiet, isn't it? There's a little bit of clatter as it starts up when it's cold, which I think we all expect with the diesel, really.
Yeah.
But after it's up and running, it's very quiet in the cabin from that. And it's very quiet in the cabin full stop when you're driving along, particularly on motorways. If you've got the right surface as well, it's almost silent.
So it'll be great in France, then, where it's
ridiculously quiet. The tyre noise is minimal. There's a little bit of wind noise around the big, very useful wing mirrors. But I think that's more just the shape of them, and you know, the size. But I am really surprised at how quiet it is just driving along, generally, in that.
So how's the Linear-tronic system? Because before we'd found that it was really good, apart from when you were moving off in a rush. Is that still the case?
Only if it's cold. I found that slight small lag when it's cold. When it's up to temperature, it's not a problem.
That'll explain why the time that we tried it, we were doing it first thing in the morning, and that was when we noticed it.
Yes, exactly. It was purely that. I think you adapt to it quite quickly, so you anticipate that, so that you don't try and take like a gap. You would
liberties.
Yes, you would. You're not taking narrow gaps that, you know, is probably okay if you put your foot down type thing. You don't do that. You just wait for a larger gap. So, but you know, once it's up to temperature, I have not noticed it. And like I was saying last week, I just love the system. I love the smoothness and the feeling that there is just this constant stream of power there. It's just going to keep giving me in this really smooth manner. I will just keep going and going until, you know, I've reached the speed I need to get to, or I want to be at, and then it just cruises along at that speed type thing.
Or a bit quicker than you want to be at.
Yeah, that is a bit of a problem. I mean, this is a 2-litre engine. This is quite a large vehicle. All-wheel drive, so it's not light either. And there are times I've been driving along and then sort of going, oh, just check it. Oh, I'm at that speed. Okay, just ease off a little bit. That's okay. Because you are so cosseted in it. You are so cosseted. The ride is so comfortable. You know, you're not sort of going, oh, I'm going over everything. Nothing like that. You're just... floating is taking it a bit too far, but you are... things have been evened out. I mean, we're not talking... flying carpet stuff here, but because of all the thing that's gone on, you are suddenly at a speed that you didn't anticipate you were at, because you know we're old enough to have grown up with cars where you go, what's the engine noise, I know what speed I'm doing type thing. You don't have that.
I might still have some like that.
Yes,
yeah.
I don't have that luxury with this, so I've been very impressed with that it's just, I mean, when you absolutely floor it, there is a noise, you know, you do get a noise from that. But once you get to the speed that you want to be at and you're cruising along, it's very refined in that point of view.
Cool.
Steering-wise, it's a bit numb.
Does it go round corners?
Yeah, it's a bit neutral, a bit numb, but where I point it, it goes. You know, I'm not in a WRX. I'm not looking for, you know, all the feedback in the world. Oh, look, the gravel got slightly larger as I got round the corner. You know, I'm not interested in that. You know, am I smoothly going around the corner? I'm not having to make corrections all the time. There's no play in the steering wheel. That'll do. That's nice. Thank you very much. Let's keep going. I can let go of the wheel and it keeps in a straight line. It's not trying to veer one way or another. You know, You know what? In this type of car,
no,
what more are you
after?
I agree
completely with you. No, you're completely right. I'm just laughing at the let go of the wheel. It's like that's when there's a problem with a new car.
Yes.
But I think you're completely right. It's, you know, with that kind of ride, you don't want to be feeling the colour of the dumper you've run through or whatever. You know, it's important. And the last thing, of course, is that it's got four-wheel drive. And whilst I imagine you've not been doing much green laning.
No, I've been in narrow lanes, but they've not been specifically green. Symmetrical four-wheel drive. Don't forget to say that, symmetrical. Otherwise, the people with Subaru balaclavas will come and hurt us if we don't say symmetrical.
Yes.
but with all that, funnily enough, the car grips really well.
It would do. It's a Subaru. It's what they do. It's kind of what they're famous for.
Yeah, again, with the steering that goes where you point it, I have massive amounts of confidence that wherever I want to go, I'm going to go. I mean, I know I've taken it off-road, and even with my inability to drive off-road, I didn't get stuck. You know, we have video... No, I eventually got out. We have video proof that I could eventually get out. So I have got so much confidence in this car that wherever I'm going, that, well, not in an arrogant way, but just because I feel like I know something other people don't.
Okay.
Because there's an awful lot of people going like a big SUV. You know what my thoughts are on an estate anyway.
Yeah.
I love an estate. And I think that people have forgotten how useful and how much an estate can do for them over, say, an SUV that doesn't necessarily have the space that they anticipated it might, because it's essentially a raised up car. But not necessarily a big one. And and I'm driving around sort of going, you know, there's so many people around here who don't understand that this does so much more than their car can do. You know, and I'm looking at some premium SUVs here as well. You know, this will go in places theirs won't.
Mm-hmm.
To the point where... And this is in my likes of the week.
Yes, I was going to ask about this because I was going to ask if this was related to the to
well, this is part of my. I feel like I know something others don't, because in the last week or so, other Outback owners have acknowledged. We have acknowledged each other's presence on the road in a very drive along.
Oh, the finger of acknowledgement. Yes. And I mean the good finger of acknowledgement, not the bad finger of acknowledgement.
Yes, you're one of the club. Don't say anything too loud. Shh, quiet. That's it. Just a nod. Just a dig in the cap. And that's been amazing.
That's been, it's so sad.
I know, I'm so childish, but it's been fantastic because I feel like really I'm in this little club.
For those of you that can't see the great ear-to-ear grin that he's giving as he goes through this, it's really quite pathetic from a grown man. So you've been overwhelmingly positive, but there was one thing.
Yeah,
In
the last week, I have been becoming increasingly annoyed.
Dirty trouser leg.
With my dirty trouser leg, as much as my constant forgetting that I'm going to get a dirty trouser leg unless I lift my leg over the slightly wider sill because of plastic cladding and stuff, which does a fantastic job of attracting all the muck in the where I have been driving. It has been plastered with that.
That is one of the two downsides of cladding.
Yeah. And
you have the fading and you have the makes the inside of your trouser leg dirty.
Yes. So I am getting better at remembering I need to step slightly wider out as I get out. But that, I mean, it's quite pathetic, of everything. You know, I'm going, it's got my trouser dirty, you know, which is mainly down to me.
Yeah,
but
that's what I would have said.
But the thing is, you know, there's for what I want it to do, it is doing everything I need it to do at the moment. I am struggling to find real major downsides with it.
Is it right? Okay, quick one. Is it going to be just as well you're not present when the little man from Subaru comes to take it back?
It's probably best. It's probably best that I'm not there, because I then can't get too upset.
Okay, that's good. I just thought it was worth checking.
Anyway, this week it's all about technology.
It is. It's technology, isn't it, Andrew? This time.
So, how did you get on?
There isn't masses amounts of technology. I think this leads back to what we were saying last week about that we know that in 10 years' time the Outback will still work. Pretty much everything in there will still be the same as it is today. You know, the switches will feel the same. There won't be any wear on materials that, you know, that you're using heavily and that sort of thing. And I think the technology is from that point of view as well, that it's not massive amounts of technology, but it's the important, generally it's the important bits that you would want in there. But you have the confidence that it will still work as it does now in many years' time. So just a quick breakdown of what is in there is we've got the 7-inch touchscreen infotainment system.
That's the Subaru Starlink one.
Yeah, and if you remember, it's got the buttons around the outside, which actually make it much easier to use, so it's not a complete touchscreen type thing. So you don't have to look at it. You know where certain buttons are. But it does have touchscreen elements. It's got the sat-nav in there. It's got your connection to, if you've got a smartphone, whether it's an AUX.
Is that USB and
Bluetooth? Yeah, you've got USB, you've got Bluetooth, you've got AUX connector. If you go down the Bluetooth route, you have the ability to sync your calendar. You know, you connect your phone and you sync your calendar and you sync your address book if that's what you want to do. I'm still not sure why anybody needs to connect their calendar to a car, but, you know, that neither here nor there.
It's not Skype, for example. It does make more sense than that, but, yeah, I don't really get that one myself. But I can understand the syncing the address book, though.
Yeah, the address book is one thing because it will. You do have the ability to use the voice activated controls, so you can ask it to dial people for you, so I can understand that. And also it doesn't have Apple CarPlay or Android Auto, so this is their own system for doing that. So whereas when we've got in other cars that you know for us it's Apple CarPlay because that's our ecosystem, you don't have to do anything extra, you just plug it in and it's the phone effectively. So, you know, I can see why you do need to connect your address book and things like that. But I think apart from the technology of the four-wheel drive system, I think that the main technology is EyeSight, which is their driver assist, which we've both experienced.
Yes.
To varying degrees of terrified moments when we tested it out.
Well, some people get a little bit enthusiastic and go driving at the pretend car in front quite hard, and yet it still stopped in time.
It did. There will be links in the show notes to Alan filming me driving a little bit quicker than perhaps.
A little bit quick.
Was expected by all involved, except for me. Because it hadn't crashed with Alan doing it, you see. So I was confident in this, and it worked fine. But there is our video in there. This will be in the show notes to show you the EyeSight spotting an obstruction in the road and automatically braking because I wasn't braking to prevent us from having an accident or from impacting onto the vehicle in front. That system also will stop you from pulling ahead if it spots an obstruction. So say you're at a roundabout and you look right, as we all do, and the car in front makes a hint to go ahead and you think, oh, they're going ahead, I'll look right now and creep up. This, you know, and that's because that's often a time when people have accidents, or if there's a vehicles in front of you. I said, I think in the first report, about how the adaptive cruise control helped do a lot of the journey coming down to the southwest, particularly when the traffic got very heavy and slowed down a lot, that even though I was monitoring it and my foot was poised to either brake or accelerate, whichever one it needed to be, the adaptive cruise control dealt with that, and I didn't actually do any of the accelerating or braking for that part of the journey.
Yeah. Should we just very quickly just really summarise what sort of features are included in the EyeSight? So it's lane departure warning. Is it lane assist as well?
No, just departure.
Just the warning. Adaptive cruise control, that emergency braking, the warning for the obstructions ahead, so that's if the vehicle's slowing down, or if say a vehicle hasn't moved off from a junction. So if you think the car's moving off, you turn to look and check because you're all safety conscious. Then as you put the foot down and the other car's still there, it goes, no, and stops you.
Quite.
And it does that in reverse as well, doesn't it?
No.
Are you sure?
There's no reverse sensors.
Ah, okay, fair enough. No, it doesn't do that in reverse. I thought it did it. Okay, so it doesn't do it in reverse, but it does. It will stop you driving off forwards if there's an obstruction in the parking space.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Okay, so that's still quite comprehensive.
But I think the main plus of this system is the fact that it is stereo cameras, which mirrors the human eyes and how we look at things. But like the human eyes, there are limitations to what it can deal with. These are driver assists. We have to repeat that because of things that are out in the press and the way that some people look at this sort of technology and presume it's autonomous. This is not autonomous. This is assisting.
Yeah, this is quality assist as opposed to anything else.
Yeah, quite. But there are times when I've had it myself, and I've spoken to Subaru to just double check that it wasn't something I was doing wrong or there wasn't an issue with the system. But these were the system will disengage under certain circumstances. For example, one of the circumstances I found that it did that was if I go over the rise of a hill and it is looking into the sky and the sky is bright, it sometimes has shut down or it has just disengaged, where I get a warning that says on the dashboard with a couple of bleeps saying EyeSight is not on, and it makes it very clear. So it's not going to do your lane departure warning. It's not going to do your emergency braking. It's not going to warn you that you're coming up to something in front of you. Anything like that, is off now. It's just you in charge. And it is very loud and it is very clear. It's not a case of, I'll put my finger on the steering wheel every 3 or 4 minutes and we'll be fine. It's nothing like that. It's very clear that this system is no longer there to assist you, so you have to pay attention. Which I like.
Yes, yeah, as long as it's clear about it, then that's just great. That's what matters, is that you know what's happening.
Exactly. The example I've given you there is you go up a rise and it's a bright sky. It's the same as you or I being blinded by the sun. That's what's happened to the system. It's just been overloaded with brightness that it can't read anything, and it's just had to shut down for the longevity of the system of working, because it can't recognize anything.
Yeah, it's stereoscopic video.
Yeah.
Anyway, were there any surprises, anything that you particularly, that you weren't expecting the car to do from a technological point of view that actually magically happened?
Well, I mean, apart from the EyeSight disengaging in a few circumstances that I've had, and mainly it's been going over the crests or rises. Another one that happened, because I have been down in the southwest, is obviously the southwest does like a narrow lane, and it does like the fact that the road is about 10 foot below the bottom of a hedge. So it does seem like you're in a tunnel. and that is an instance in which Subaru's own information does say that it will disengage because it's coming out of a tunnel into the bright light again. I think, again, it's this blindness and it's just overwhelming.
Yeah, it can't put sunglasses on.
No, it's you know, the pupils do not shut down close quick enough, things like that. So that was one thing that I was a little bit surprised at. But once I'd asked questions and read some information, I was going, well, of course that's the case. Other surprises, and these are, I mean, I'm getting quite nitpicky here, by the way. I will warn everyone. But every time I switch off the engine, the doors unlock. I
see that to me
really
is sensible.
Don't like
Sorry.
That. I really, really don't like that. I know there are safety issues and safety reasons why that happens, but I really don't like that. Having lived in cities, I would prefer to be the person who's in control of unlocking when I unlock.
See, I'm such a... You see, in this occasion, I'm such a bumpkin that really annoys me, because the whole auto-locking of doors in a situation like that annoys me, because little getting in and out to open and close gates on tracks is a right pain. So yeah, I find the auto door locking quite irritating.
Yeah.
It's curious that you mentioned that, because the BRZ behaved slightly differently. Whenever you turned it off, it was only when you turned off the button, and it was only when you opened the door handle that it would unlock, I think.
Now, this is if you press the on-off button, click, everything's unlocked.
It's probably a good safety feature, though, in an accident or something.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand if it's an accident. You know, I would understand that if an airbag has been deployed.
Yes.
Do it then. But when I've just shut the engine down, I don't want that.
Okay.
I really don't want that.
So, come on. Let's end on a positive note. Come on.
On a more positive note.
Because you've been a bit of a grumpy Gus tonight on these.
Oh, I probably have been a little bit. I do apologise. But on the light side of things, it's just done everything we've asked it. And there's been no fuss. There's been no drama. I've just gone, I want to get us to here, or I want to do this, or I want to go down this itty-bitty road, or I want to go over there. Just whatever it is, it's just done it. You know, it's just... There's not masses of personality about this car. But
Do you think you could become fond of it, though?
Yeah. I definitely have, as a driver. And see last week's update on what I've said about the driving side of things.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I think the family have as well. Everybody's more than happy to get in it. No one's at all worried. Oh, we're not going for another drive in that. Oh, we have to do this, you know, whatever. And as I said before, the most important passenger up front, you know, she's very happy with it and what it's done and how it's gone about doing it as well. So there we are. That's the end of the latest update.
In summary, Andrew.
Yeah, in summary then. Just finalise... Well, actually, I need to finalise the final economy stats.
Okay.
Because there wasn't any the last time we were talking about the technology, but in this one, on the journey back home from the southwest, which was mainly motorways, managed to get up to 37 miles per gallon, which is the best I had, which is still quite a bit off what the official figures are. So... That's the traffic didn't help. My driving style probably isn't the greatest for that. Although on a lot of this, it was working on its cruise control.
And it will also
adaptive.
Be stuffed to the gunnels, of course.
Yes, I mean it is. It had things and people in. That's for sure. So that is true. So that was the final, just to finalise on that, that's the final of the figures. When I think about the Outback, I have not been able to work out any direct competition for it Other manufacturers have offerings that are similar, but they're either much more costly or they don't have the capability.
Okay. So, I mean, by that, you're obviously talking that you're saying that the Volvos are way more the bigger Volvos are way more costly. The smaller Volvos don't necessarily have the capability. Audi A6.
Similar. It's a similar thing. They're way dearer. Much more expensive.
Yeah, way dearer.
And it's not the symmetrical four-wheel drive that's and that sort of stuff. It's, you know, it's not going to be as capable off-road or in situations where you may need that off-road ability.
Mm-hmm.
So I couldn't find any direct competition for
it. And competition doesn't even come from within Subaru's range, does it? Because these days the mental blank Forester. Thank you. Yeah. Is a very different beast. It is quite a bit smaller. And
well, the Forester's actually a full-on SUV now.
Mm-hmm.
It's much taller. It's not as big, but it's much taller.
Certainly much squarer.
This seems to have replaced what previous generations of Forester was in sort of looks and style and stance. A raised up estate,
mm-hmm,
that's just a little bit larger than that, but isn't the full on SUV. You know, they've evolved their range in that way.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
As expected, I found that the Subaru was solid like you would expect a Subaru to be. You know, we talked about this previously. I have full confidence that the elements of that car will still be working in 10 years' time.
Yeah.
There might be the odd scuff or something on a bit of plastic, but basically that car will be as it is now.
Mm-hmm.
And I had no concerns about that at all. I have full confidence that would be the way, and it's not a case of, oh, as long as I put it, wrapped it in bubble wrap or something like that. No. If you used it as you would want to use it, it should be perfectly fine. You know, it should last you many years if that's something you are after in a car.
It should smell a bit more of wet dog, but otherwise,
probably, yeah. Probably.
Subaru Outback driver stereotype number 403. There, everyone.
So I liked the technology that was in there, particularly the driver assistance technology.
Mm-hmm.
was good. The eyesight is excellent. And one element of that I was really impressed with was how it told you, and this is going to sound odd, but how it told you when it disengaged, that those moments where the technology and the hardware is not able to do what it is meant to,
mm-hmm,
and it tells you very clearly, very loudly, it's not on. So there's no ambiguity. There's no, oh, well, I thought this would be working for me. There's no question about that. You know very well, and you know immediately when it says, we are not in a position that we can do anything to help you with this, so you need to be fully in control, fully concentrating. Okay. But I'm still surprised there's no front parking sensors. That I was worried the entire time because the front of it drops off.
It's quite long, and it does drop off quite a lot.
Drops off. Yeah. It's not a square front. You're sort of, am I close? Am I close? Lights are on. Come on, let's have a look.
Yes. Thou shalt not damage the press cars.
Yeah, well, yeah. But I thought that's something that they could install quite easily and fairly inexpensively. Didn't need a camera. It just needs sensors, I would suggest.
Yes, a friend of mine did that in a previous car. His he had a similar challenge. So he bought one of the kits that was meant to go on the back of your car and had it fitted on the front separately,
yeah,
so he could just turn it on, because he similarly was very nervous about getting the front bumpers of his car. So absolutely, in summary, because I've already said in summary.
Yes, in the summary of the summary.
Yes, it is turning into a summary of a summary, mate.
Apologies for that. But yes, if you are looking for a long-lasting, rugged estate, large estate, but you don't want to go the full SUV.
Mm-hmm.
You like a slightly raised height, and you want something that you know is going to work and keep working, and you possibly need it occasionally or even more often than that to go into more rugged areas, more off-roading rather than maybe just rising up on the curb, then definitely give the Subaru Outback a look. Give it a try. The family loved it. I really enjoyed it. And I think it was absolutely perfect as a countryside vehicle. That was its home, although it was no, being in the city was no problem with it because we did go into several cities. So it's not that you felt it was too big or anything. But in the countryside, it just oozed. I just felt it oozed class. And it was. I always knew that if I got myself into some daft position, it would get me out. That's how I felt about it, that I would not be in a problem with this car.
You trusted it.
Absolutely.
Cool. Fantastic. And I don't think, yeah, I think that really does round up the summary of the summary on that one.
It's been summarised.
Excellent. So thank you, as ever, to the folks at Subaru for...
our first long-term loan.
Yes, first long-term loan. That was really, really excellent, so thank you so much.
Yes.
Rest of you, don't forget that between now and next week, you can give us any feedback and share your thoughts with the show at Motoring Podcast on Twitter and Instagram, on Facebook, and on the contact page of motoringpodcast.com, the hub of all our activities. Please don't forget our Patreon offers. Go to motoringpodcast.com/support for that. And if you can't do that, then leave a review and rating on iTunes or however your podcast app lets you do such a thing. It really does matter. In between times, Andrew, the best way to get in touch with you, sir?
Best way to get in touch with me would be via Twitter. If you search for Crap Windscreen, you will see a picture of me actually standing on the back of an Outback.
A different one. No, Outbacks were damaged in the taking of that photograph.
No. We cleaned it afterwards as well.
Yeah, we did.
So, Alan, if people want to get in touch with you directly, what's the best way?
Twitter, where I'm at AJPBradley, B-R-A-D-L-E-Y. As I say, we'll be back soon, but until then, I've been Alan Bradley.
I've been Andrew Clues.
And safe motoring.